This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiya Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The reason why we felt in particular we had to speak out today is because of these reports of an imminent battle for Khartoum. And we are worried that this is taking us further away from peace and further into a horrific situation for civilians.
That was Ravina Shamadasani, the spokesperson for UN Human Rights Chief Turk Volker, says the war in Sudan that has been raging for nearly 2 years has taken a more dangerous turn. Details coming up. Also, police in South Sudan declared a nighttime curfew on Friday after anti-Sudanese protests degenerated into looting. And Zimbabwe's ruling party says it will try to amend the constitution so President Emmerson Mnangagwa can run for a third term. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Volker Turk warns that Sudanese civilians are in greater peril than ever as ethnically motivated attacks and hate speech by the warring parties become increasingly common. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Human Rights Chief Turk says the situation for civilians in Sudan is increasingly desperate as the Sudanese armed forces and paramilitary rapid support forces battle for control at all costs. He says the war that has been raging for nearly 2 years has taken a more dangerous turn as evidence emerges of war crimes and other atrocities. In the last week alone, his spokesperson, Ravina Shamdasani, says the UN Human Rights Office documented at least 21 deaths and two attacks in Al Jazeera state. She adds the actual number of direct attacks on civilians and of those who have been killed is probably much higher.
The reason why we felt in particular we had to speak out today is because of these reports of an imminent battle for Khartoum. We are worried about the kinds of violations that we may see as the parties to the conflict battle for control at all costs for Khartoum. And we are worried that this is taking us further away from peace and further into a horrific situation for civilians.
Shamdasani says her office has received three videos that document scenes of violence, including killings, showing people being dehumanized and denigrated. She says the victims were subjected to violence, summary executions in what were hailed by perpetrators as a cleansing operation. She adds the videos reportedly were filmed in Wad Madani with men in SAF uniforms visibly present.
Serious concerns also persist for civilians in North Darfur, where ethnically motivated attacks by RSF and its allied Arab militias against African ethnic groups, particularly the Zagawa and the Fur, continue to exact a horrific toll.
Shamdasani says the High Commissioner is calling on all states to abide by a UN arms embargo and refrain from providing the warring parties with lethal weapons. The United States declared sanctions on Army Chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan Thursday, a week after the U.S. slapped sanctions on RSF Commander Mohammed Hamdan Daglo. Shamdasani says her office generally opposes broad sectoral sanctions as they can harm the civilian population. However, she notes targeted sanctions can be effective in exerting pressure on specific individuals and organizations responsible for the conflict. Sudan's army-aligned foreign ministry rejected the U.S. sanctions, calling them immoral. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Police in South Sudan declared a nighttime curfew on Friday after anti-Sudanese protests in the capital Juba degenerated into looting. The French news agency AFP reports that protests broke out on Thursday following unconfirmed reports that 29 South Sudanese citizens were killed in neighboring Sudan earlier in the week. Sudan's army was accused of killing civilians after retaking the city of Wad Madani from the paramilitary rapid support forces. It appears to mark the latest brutal episode in a civil war that has killed tens of thousands and displaced more than 12 million since breaking out in April 2023. Human Rights Watch has found that African governments continue to crack down and wrongly arrest political opponents, critics, activists, and journalists. The rights group also says armed forces and armed groups in some African countries have targeted civilians, killing them and driving them from their homes. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
The conflict in Sudan and Ethiopia feature prominently in a Human Rights Watch report released Thursday. It says that in Sudan, the war between armed forces and the rebel rapid support forces has displaced 12 million people, destroyed infrastructure, and blocked humanitarian assistance. In Ethiopia, rights group investigators found that government forces in the Amhara region committed widespread attacks against medical professionals, patients, and health facilities. Mosi Segun is the head of the Human Rights Watch Africa Division. She says armed conflict is not the only form of rights violation on the continent.
On top of all of that, you have all of the civic space restriction abuses, you know, including just the intolerance for freedom of expression, intolerance for freedom of association and assembly. Protests are being clamped down on, people who are pushing for their rights, you know, or to even comment on government policies and measures are being hunted down. Here in East Africa, we are seeing a very disturbing trend towards abductions.
Kenya has captured the attention of human rights groups for recent alleged abductions of anti-government protesters and activists from foreign countries, some of whom have been deported to Turkey and Uganda. The Human Rights Watch report also focuses on the seemingly endless conflict in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where civilians are killed, women raped, and attacks on camps for the internally displaced continue to push more people into neighboring countries. Congo has accused Rwanda for supporting M23 rebels, an allegation Rwanda denies. Clementine de Monsieur, Human Rights Watch senior researcher, says the expansion of conflict worsens civilians' harm.
It's certainly a concern to see the regionalization of the conflict. We've seen in the past cycles of violence in eastern Congo and across the Great Lakes region that have had a devastating impact on civilian populations. And we're not seeing significant signs of pressure on the different parties to the conflict to reduce violations and harm to civilians.
The report notes that countries in West Africa ruled by the military, like Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger, have cracked down on opposition and dissent, freedom of expression, and backsliding in the fight against corruption. It notes that in southern Africa, Mozambique is grappling with post-election violence in which hundreds of people have been killed. Elizabeth Kamundia, Deputy Director of Disability Rights at Human Rights Watch, says conflict and violence are causing a rise in disabilities.
We have seen a rise in the number of people acquiring injuries that lead to disabilities. We've seen increased psychological distress and mental health impacts on people, families, communities as a result of war and conflict. We've seen difficulties with access to medication for people who have mental health conditions, and therefore they are forced to stop their treatment.
Human Rights Watch's newly released World Report reviewed human rights records of more than 100 countries, including 25 in Africa. Despite the widespread abuses and violence against people in Africa, HRW notes that, like the rest of the world, African people are resisting and pushing back against autocratic rule and abuse of their rights. It notes they are also mobilizing on social media and streets to demand an end to the abuses and bad governance that has contributed to divisions and conflict among communities. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
Zimbabwe's ruling party says it will initiate steps to amend the constitution so President Emmerson Mnangagwa can run for a third term in the 2028 elections. The opposition is strongly opposed to amending the 2013 constitution, which limited presidents to 2 5-year terms. Columbus Mavanga reports from Harare.
Those are members of parliament seeing after meeting President Emmerson Mnangagwa at his farm and convincing him to run for a third term. Mnangagwa previously said he wants to step down when his current term ends in 2028. In an interview Thursday with VOA, Ziyambi Ziyambi, Zimbabwe's Minister of Justice, Legal and Parliamentary Affairs, said the government is ready to start the ball rolling once lawmakers introduce the bill to amend the constitution.
Is there a prohibition in amending anything in the constitution? The only clause that I know in the constitution, it says any electoral amendments have to be done 6 months before an election for that amendment to be used in the coming election. Anything else, I'm not aware.
Love Moma Duku, a law professor at the University of Zimbabwe and an opposition leader, says it will be difficult, though not possible, for the ruling ZANU-PF party to change the constitution in time for its leader to run in the 2028 election.
Legally, yes, you can go through the steps. The steps will require a publication of the first bill, give Zimbabweans generally a 90-day period to debate it. Thereafter, take it to parliament. It must get a two-thirds majority. And thereafter, there must be a referendum. That alone tells you that it will be very difficult. It cannot be assumed that since ZANU-PF has a two-thirds majority, they will obtain the two-thirds majority. They may not obtain the two-thirds majority.
Douglas Monzora, leader of the Movement for Democratic Change Party, says the MDC will campaign vehemently against the bid to have Mnangagwa stand for a third term. Monzora, who is a lawyer, says one referendum will not suffice for Mnangagwa to stand in 2028.
They will need another referendum, this time specifically stating whether or not President Mnangagwa must stand again. And these two referendums must not be within 6 months of one another. So we will campaign for a no vote again, not because we have anything personal against President Mnangagwa. We think that President Mnangagwa, after his term, must go and rest. We think that it is time for other leaders. So we will campaign no in that regard.
But Ziyambi Ziyambi says ZANU-PF will overcome all obstacles in the way of Mnangagwa's third term.
Listen, ZANU-PF is a mass party. Our structures are to the grassroots, from village level. So when we are doing resolutions, that's where they start. So it's not the top leadership that said they want anything. In fact, the president has been very clear that I want to abide by the constitution. But it's the people within the grassroots that indicated that we want this resolution. So again, I am not sure why it will arise that we need to go and convince the same people who are the authors of the resolution.
President Mnangagwa ruled Zimbabwe for 37 years before Mnangagwa, Mugabe's vice president, took power in a 2017 coup. Mnangagwa is 82 years old and is currently the fifth oldest head of state in Africa. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
On Monday, January 20th, the American people will again watch history in the making with the inauguration of their 47th president, Donald John Trump. VOA will broadcast the presidential inauguration live starting at 1600 UTC for people around the world to see democracy in action and how peaceful transfer of power works. Tune in right here on VOA.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. A short time ago, Israel's Security Cabinet voted to approve a ceasefire agreement with Hamas to suspend the fighting in the Gaza Strip. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's full cabinet has been meeting to decide whether to give final approval. If given final approval, the ceasefire is to begin Sunday with the exchange of Israeli hostages for Palestinian prisoners, after which the terms of a permanent end to the conflict would be finalized. Linda Grantstein reports from Jerusalem on the reaction earlier to the proposed deal.
Israelis are eagerly awaiting the release of 98 hostages, both alive and dead, whom Hamas has been holding since October 7, 2023, when the militant group killed 1,200 people and kidnapped 250 others in a raid on southern Israel. In the first stage of the ceasefire agreement, set to begin Sunday, Hamas will free 33 hostages, women, children, and the elderly, including two dual American-Israeli citizens. Israel will free hundreds of Palestinian prisoners. But some in Israel are skeptical that Hamas will keep its promises. Until now, Hamas has refused to provide a list of which hostages are still alive. Udi Goren's cousin, Tal Haimi, was killed fighting on October 7, 2023, and his body taken to Gaza.
What happens when Hamas says, you know, we can't find your cousin. Sorry, we don't know where he is. What do we do? Do we break down the deal? Do we have the international backup, the guarantees that we were given to make sure that, all right, if this is what Hamas does, then the deal ends?
According to the deal, discussions on a long-term truce are set to start 16 days into the ceasefire. Some Israeli analysts say there is no guarantee that they will reach a final agreement. Jonathan Conricus is a former Israeli army spokesman.
Ceasefires have a tendency of turning from temporary to less temporary and more permanent. That would be a very bad scenario for Israel, for Israeli security, and it would be, I think, horrible for Gazans, because that would leave them in an interim situation where, on one hand, Hamas continues to govern and Hamas is still in control, but Hamas is too weak to actually do anything useful for Gaza.
Palestinians in Gaza say they are happy to see an end to 15 months of Israeli attacks that Hamas says have killed more than 46,000 people and decimated the territory. Fadi Naim, a resident of Gaza City, says he is happy to return to his home, but people have lost many family members. The ceasefire would also mean a large increase in humanitarian aid entering Gaza. The World Food Program said it had 80,000 tons of food waiting outside Gaza or en route. Meanwhile, Palestinians say Israeli attacks on Gaza continue. The Hamas-run health ministry said at least 80 Palestinians were killed by Israeli airstrikes since Wednesday. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
With the inauguration of President-elect Donald Trump looming Monday, Slovenian model turned U.S. First Lady Melania Trump is headed back to the White House after a bittersweet experience in the limelight when her husband first took office in 2016. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias gives us a look at her life and voter expectations for her second term.
Her parents named her Melania Knaps. The world now knows her as former U.S. First Lady Melania Trump. She was born on April 26, 1970, in Novo Mesto, Slovenia, formerly Yugoslavia. During her upbringing in the town of Sevnica, her father sold cars and her mother worked in the textile industry. Knaps, however, was interested in fashion, recalls her former school friend Mirjana Jelancic.
She also liked designing. She would make new clothes out of old ones.
Knevs paused her college studies in design and under the name Melania Knaus pursued a modeling career in Europe. In the 1990s, her success brought her to the United States. Ohio University history professor Catherine Jellison via Skype.
As a fashion model, and someone who was often invited to upscale parties in New York. My understanding is that is how she met Donald Trump.
Knaus became Melania Trump on January 22, 2005, and gave birth to her first and only son, Baron, a year later. That same year, she also became a U.S. citizen. Melania Trump's life took a different turn when her husband ran for U.S. president in 2016 with the Republican Party, and she joined him on the campaign trail.
It is wonderful to be here today with you and with my husband. I'm very proud of him.
Donald Trump was sworn in as the 45th U.S. president in January of 2017. as First Lady Melania Trump toured the world and took on projects like the Be Best campaign, focusing on children's well-being, online safety, and opioid abuse. She kept a lower profile than many first ladies, but still faced intense media scrutiny, Jellison notes.
Criticized in some quarters for her fashion choices, for her decision not to move into the White House right away, for her Be Best campaign not being one of the most successful public service projects by a first lady.
After leaving the White House, Melania Trump practically disappeared from the public eye. She occasionally re-emerged to support her husband's 2024 bid for re-election and to promote her memoir.
Writing this memoir has been a deeply personal and reflective journey for me.
Wisconsin voter Austin Smith voted for Donald Trump in 2016. He shared his hopes for Melania Trump's return to the White House.
I would like her to maybe take up a couple of pet projects. One thing that I'm really passionate about is school lunches.
Democratic voter Jesslyn Kaur would like Melania Trump to be a, quote, impactful first lady.
Going out and talking to, you know, urban communities, going out across the country and making yourself known, not just as a figure that's like standing behind the president, but as a woman with some sort of power.
Analyst Jellison, however, thinks as a second-term first lady, Melania Trump will probably continue to, for the most part, shy away from the limelight. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News.
Nigeria's military says it has killed 76 Islamic militants during operations conducted in various parts of Borno State between January 7th and the 13th. Army spokesperson Edward Buba told a news conference that the military also arrested 72 suspects and rescued 8 hostages. The Associated Press reports that the spokesperson did not provide details about the extremists' affiliation. He also did not specify if any members of the Nigerian military were killed during the operations. The announcement by Nigeria's military comes days after suspected Boko Haram militants killed at least 40 farmers in another part of Borno State.
On Monday, January 20th, the American people will again watch history in the making with the inauguration of their 47th president, Donald John Trump. VOA will broadcast the presidential inauguration live starting at 1600 UTC for people around the world to see democracy in action and how peaceful transfer of power works. Tune in right here on VOA.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
That we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Killa Williams, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.